Welcome back. I'm Peter St. Ange. This is a weekly roundup of my daily videos on the economy and freedom, where I cut through the BS and lay out what the gaslighting clowns pulled out of their hats this week and what is coming next. If you haven't ditched your real car for an electric vehicle, you are not the only one. The EV dream is dying, at least outside Tesla. In short, nobody wants them, not nearly enough to cover the billions of dollars that irresponsible car companies have poured into EVs to entertain left-wing journalists and BlackRock. A few months ago, I mentioned that Ford was set to lose $5.5 billion on EVs this year, having already lost $5 billion last year on the unicorn farts. The Wall Street Journal estimates Ford could actually boost profits by 50% if they drop EVs altogether. Indeed, Ford recently announced they're halting shipments of the much-hyped electric F-150 since dealers were refusing to accept trucks that they cannot sell. Ford's now calling off a brand-new battery factory that was supposed to create thousands of jobs in Michigan. Meanwhile, Swedish carmaker Volvo, well, Chinese carmaker Volvo since 2010, said they're cutting off funding for their loss-making EV affiliate altogether. Now, Volvo had been one of the earliest adopters of EVs, even promising to stop making gasoline vehicles, so apparently that's done. Renault canceled its EV IPO, the shares of EV maker Polestar have fallen 83%. Hertz, the rental company, said it's dumping a third of its EVs. Apparently they're too expensive and customers do not want them. Even longtime EV cheerleader Consumer Reports now concludes they have twice as many problems and are, quote, less reliable than the old fashions. And suddenly, Toyota is suddenly the smartest guy at the table after taking heat for years from environmentalists and the mainstream media for being EV laggards, for being hopelessly wed to the outdated internal combustion engine. But Toyota held the line, insisting customers don't want EVs, they want hybrids at most. And now, Toyota's hybrid sales are rising almost 40%, and they don't have billions in EV losses to write off. This all sent Toyota's stock price up 80%, Now, as London's Financial Times, one of the fiercest critics, now sheepishly puts it, quote, maybe Toyota was right all along. Meanwhile, those who did drink the Kool-Aid are dropping like flies. Short companies got bait and switched by government subsidies and left-wing journalists, and now shareholders are paying the price. When the dust settles, I imagine the only survivors will be Tesla and its Chinese imitators, who will keep plowing through Beijing's free government money, since they don't have to answer to voters. So what's next? The green dream is dying far beyond EVs. Megabanks are pulling out of the $68 trillion climate action fund. That's trillion with a T. Windmills are being canceled across the country or going bust. Politicians are pretending they never heard of green, while the Wall Street Journal writes that green is the, quote, latest dirty word in corporate America. Why? Because when consumers have a choice, they say no. Unfortunately, that's only true where they do have a choice. I've talked about incredible jumps in energy prices and failing regimes like Germany or California, where green energy is being forced on consumers. So if your utility goes green and jacks the price, you can't opt out, even if the EV bloodbath is saying people don't want to go bankrupt playing for climate fairies. Of course, Washington is years, if not decades, behind the curve. Their lobbyists will keep pouring hundreds of billions of your money into green tech that nobody wants. The cronies will make out, as they have with every failed green project since Solyndra. And given the sums involved, it's a trillion and counting in the U.S. alone, when the smoke clears, we'll have a whole new generation of rust belts with a whole new generation of taxpayers on the hook for every last penny. Federal debt is exploding, up $100 billion in just 4 days. Will we be melting the family silver to cover Washington's drunkest sailors, or, as FX Hedge puts it, will we replace our wallets with wheelbarrows? In fact, it took just 100 days for federal debt to go up a full $1 trillion. Now, for those following along at home, that comes to $3.6 trillion per year in additional debt. That's roughly $28,000 per American family, or $2,300 per month, basically a second mortgage and a generous one at that. Of course, that doesn't begin to cover what you give to Washington. Federal spending is about twice that, meaning the average American family sends almost $5,000 per month to Washington, which is largely hidden since they take it out of your paycheck before you see it, or they embed it in the things you buy. Now, a prominent Wharton professor is warning that the debt explosion could cause a, quote, meltdown in financial markets as early as next year. Joao Gomez, Wharton's Senior Vice Dean of Research, warns the $34 trillion debt, soon to be 35, could trigger a spiral like we saw in Britain in 2022, when national debt fear spiked interest rates, sparking panic selling in bonds that threatened to crash the economy and bankrupt banks and even pensions. The crisis, quote, terrified markets, crashed the pound to near parity with the dollar and toppled the prime minister. Others have raised similar alarms. The CEOs of Bank of America and JP Morgan, the two biggest in the country, recently warned of a, quote, market rebellion over debt as we careen towards a $5 trillion, quote, fiscal cliff at the end of next year. Keep in mind, that's all counting current projections. In other words, it assumes no new trillion-dollar spending surprises, and it also assumes no recession, so the fabled soft landing. If, instead, a recession does hit, then going by history, the deficit grows potentially by another couple trillion as social spending spikes and tax collections slump. Even without recession and those new spending surprises, we're looking at $37 trillion in debt by the end of this year and $40 trillion by the end of next year. It's worth noting that's about twice the pace that the Congressional Budget Office forecast. Yes, that was the forecast that said we'll have $144 trillion in federal debt by 2053. Now, when it came out that $144 trillion was met with an audible gasp, after all, that is more than literally all the money in the world. It's about one-third of the accumulated assets of humanity. And at the moment, we're actually going a lot faster. So what's next? As the saying goes, if something cannot go on forever, it will stop. Washington has lost all semblance of fiscal sanity. At this point, they're competing who can drain the treasury fastest. Now, historically, when countries reach the stage, they begin to stumble from financial crisis to crisis, each one bailed out by freshly printed trillions, meaning each crisis converts into inflation. As these pile up one after the other, people start to see the currency as something risky, something you might keep in your wallet to buy lunch with, but not somewhere to park your life savings. Instead, they sell their melting dollars for things you can drop on your foot: houses, gold or collectibles, maybe Bitcoin today, even stocks, which have a lot more intrinsic value than the Fed's bailout script. Each seller drains the dollar yet further until it becomes a runaway process. Ludwig von Mises called this the flight into real goods, and once it starts, it is very hard to stop, certainly considering this gang of clowns in Washington. So yes, unless we change course, your next wallet could be a wheelbarrow. I'm a big fan of saving Bitcoin for the long term, and the Unchained Bitcoin IRA is a great way to do that. You get the tax advantages, and if it's a Roth IRA, you're not going to pay capital gains so long as you HODL. Most Bitcoin IRAs make you give up control, which can expose you to exchange hacks or even re-lend it out like banks do. With Unchained, you control the keys to your Bitcoin, which means you always know it's there. They also provide one-on-one concierge service to walk you through it and answer any questions. Why pay more taxes than you need to? Set it up today at Unchained.com. Use promo code Peter to get $100 off a Bitcoin IRA. The Fed is blinding itself on inflation. I recently mentioned how inflation is rising again despite Jerome Powell's best hopes and prayers. In fact, since October, annualized CPI went from under 1% to almost 2% in November, nearly 3% in December, and now almost 4% at 3.73. And yet the Fed has been silent. Why? Because they don't look at the CPI. They've got their own special number called the Personal Consumption Expenditure, or PCE, Index, which is currently running a lot lower than CPI, as it almost always does. The problem is there's two big flaws with the PCE, which make it less accurate as well as artificially low, so the Fed is effectively blinding itself. Starting with accuracy, people read inflation as the cost to households, to the American people, as in, if CPI goes up 10%, stuff costs 10% more. The problem is the PCE includes government. This matters because government spends almost half of what's spent in this country, thanks to the income tax and the Fed itself. To illustrate, rent and housing make up 35% of what we spend. It makes up 35% of the CPI, but it's just 15% of the PCE. Why? Because it's diluted by the nearly $10 trillion spent on everything from migrants to Ukraine. This fake housing number alone is currently knocking 1% off the PCE index. Now multiply that across everything else: food, medical, cars, gas. Even bigger than who it measures is how PCE measures. In short, it updates too frequently to be accurate. So every price index has to decide how much weight to give things. If your rent and food double, but but t-shirts and cat litter are 10% cheaper. How do you combine those? So they do this by making a basket where your consumer dollar is something like 35 cents of housing, 15 cents of food, 10 cents on the car, a half penny on t-shirts and cat litter. So far, so good. But remember, each category also has weights inside of it. So if milk, bread, or eggs double in price, that's a bigger deal than, say, cocktail olives doubling. That's where the magic happens, something called a substitution bias. To illustrate, what if you spend half your food on beef or half your food budget on beef and half on chicken? You are hardcore keto. Now say beef doubles in price, but chicken stays the same. So you might stop buying beef and stick with chicken for a while. So what's your inflation rate? Well, if you use the old 50-50 weights, you got hit hard. Half of your food just doubled in price. But if you use the new weighting where beef is 0% of your spend, there was no inflation. Nothing happened. This problem is built into all price indexes. Everything that went up shrinks in weight as people switch to substitutes. It's always a downward bias. The index underreports inflation because people avoid expensive things. They don't avoid cheap things. The more frequently you update the weights, the worse the bias gets. So naturally, the Fed chose the most biased one to work with. So what's next? Governments universally manipulate statistics to hide the damage they caused, but the Fed doubled down, blinding themselves with the rosiest pair of glasses on the shelf. This raises the odds the Fed will ignore rising prices until, once again, they lose control. The China boom is over and Beijing is making it worse. So says the Wall Street Journal in an article detailing how Beijing took the free market miracle it inherited, one that took China decades to build, and ran it into the ground. So far this year, Chinese manufacturing has crashed with mass layoffs and falling prices, while housing is essentially frozen, as borrowers fear that trillion-dollar property developers will go bankrupt. Now, together, manufacturing and housing make up almost half the Chinese economy, much more than in the U.S., leaving the rest of China's economy limping. I mentioned in recent videos how China screwed the pooch. In short, their paranoid President Xi cracked down on private businesses, who he saw as a political threat. He even temporarily disappeared Jack Ma, founder of Alibaba and the Chinese version of Steve Jobs, the guy MBA students put on a poster on their dorm. This anti-business stance is in sharp contrast to the previous strategy of go fast or growth at any cost. It's the main reason why China has slowed under Xi, taking annual growth from the double digits of the previous decades to just 5% under Xi, which is about typical for a poor country. By the way, Chinese stocks have gone literally nowhere in 15 years, giving Japan a run for the money in terms of lost decades. Now, to make up for slowing growth, Beijing then poured trillions of cheap money into favored sectors, namely housing and manufacturing, above all, green tech. To illustrate what this flood of money did, China now makes approximately 30 times more solar panels than the U.S. and Europe combined. At one point, there were roughly 500 electric vehicle car makers in China. By the way, roughly 400 of those have now failed, leaving forests of abandoned EVs littering the Chinese countryside, what Bloomberg calls, quote, EV graveyards. In housing, of course, the ghost cities are world famous. Entire cities built at enormous expense with nobody living there, slowly crumbling in the desert sun. There had been hope for the annual People's Congress this week, where the premier was expected to announce new stimulus. Alas, hopes were dashed as Beijing remains a deer frozen in the headlight, praying that more manufacturers and developers and their banks don't crash. For background, China's sitting on roughly $50 trillion in non-financial debt, which tripled in 10 years. Much of that is in those companies that Beijing was feeding free money into. At this point, they're on the edge, facing rising debt costs as old cheap debt rolls over into new expensive debt. So what's next? Unless Beijing changes path, which is unlikely under the famously stubborn Xi, China could see rising domestic unrest from millions of angry jobless Chinese, and potentially more foreign adventurers to distract that population. Last year, China's youth unemployment hit 20.4%. Official or unofficial estimates actually put it closer to 50%, according to the South China Morning Post. And then the government ominously stopped publishing statistics. So Beijing is very much aware of the problem and could well reach for that age-old tonic to domestic discontent, war. As for America, China's collapse won't stop Beijing's efforts to destabilize our country. What it will do is launch a tidal wave of cheap imports as Chinese overproduction is dumped abroad. That would delight American consumers and reduce inflation in the short run. In the long run, it wipes out what's left of America's dying manufacturers, meaning our final import from China could be a rust belt. This podcast is supported by our sponsor, MoneyMetals.com, the most trusted bullion dealer and depository in the United States. Known for their competitive pricing, excellent customer service, and fast delivery of physical gold and silver, as well as their educational content and advocacy for sound money policies at the state and federal level. They have set the industry standard for selling, buying, and storing precious metals. If you're looking to help protect yourself against inflation and market turmoil, I hope you'll give them a try. To learn more or to buy your physical gold and silver, go to MoneyMetals.com. Why is Bitcoin soaring? Unless you live under a rock, you have heard that Bitcoin's price is up. It's tripled in the past year, briefly hitting $69,000, which Elon Musk should like. It's actually up 20-fold since the pandemic, when double-digit inflation was but a twinkle in Joe Biden's overactive imagination. Incidentally, over that period, gold, which is the other main inflation hedge and my first monetary love, almost doubled, meaning Peter Schiff can finally afford nice shirts. So what's driving the Bitcoin frenzy? In short, ETFs, the so-called Bitcoin halving, and ongoing inflation. Starting with the ETFs, Bitcoin is getting massive flows thanks to the new Bitcoin ETFs, over $15 billion so far, which is a lot for Bitcoin. An ETF is basically a container. Think of it like owning part of a bag of treasure. So most ETFs toss stocks in the bag, or maybe real estate. Bitcoin ETFs contain Bitcoin. This is a risk, of course. You're trusting the custodian, the guy holding the bag, let's say BlackRock. By the way, my lead sponsor, Unchained.com, offers an alternative where you retain custody of your Bitcoin, basically a safety deposit box you can trade, borrow against, and put in an IRA. Still, ETFs are easy for people if they're new to Bitcoin and don't understand the importance of custody. Now, the ETFs turn around and buy Bitcoin with that money, and presto, the price goes up. The second factor is the so-called halving, where the number of Bitcoin produced per day cuts in half. This automatically happens every 4 years. So think of it like if half the gold mines in the world suddenly shut down and can never reopen. This reduces the flow of new Bitcoin, which tends to drive the price up historically by quite a bit. So about 2 to 4 times in the past 3 halvings. So if that happens again, we could be looking at $100,000 Bitcoin. Finally, the big one, inflation. Bitcoin was created by a programmer, Satoshi Nakamoto, who was obsessed with gold's role as a money. So he modeled Bitcoin to work exactly like gold, meaning it's free from government control, it has a limited supply, and its main value is a backup money in case government money dies. This means that inflation makes Bitcoin act like gold, but a super concentrated version. So the ups are bigger, the downs are bigger. Hence, these past couple years, with gold doubling and Bitcoin going up 20-fold. So what's next? Bitcoin goes up a lot, it goes down a lot, but the fundamental value is what degree it will replace paper money when that day comes. The other contender, obviously, being gold. Now, gold has a long track record. On the other hand, it's also easy for governments to seize, at least on the scale to run a gold-backed money. So FDR did it in 1933, it will happen again. Bitcoin, on the other hand, cannot be seized, and you can basically email it. But many people, of course, feel uncomfortable using a money based on software rather than being backed by something real. Still, if you think paper money will die, you might want to own some of both. Final point, if you're new to Bitcoin, go slow. Get like 20 bucks, goof around, buying, selling, trading until you understand it enough to hold through the price swings. Otherwise, guarantee you will sell at the wrong time. As for me, I generally own both because I know on a long enough timeline, every paper money dies, including this one. Thanks for listening. Remember to subscribe to get next week's episode fresh in your inbox and go to petersanange.com to read the weekly articles with charts and all the gory details. Okay, we'll be watching. See you next time.